Bandwidth for MacBreak Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
You're listening to MacBreak Tech, living with the Finder. We now join a conversation already in progress.
It's very easy to get caught up in getting a machine so tricked out that you feel like you're missing limbs if you don't have 90 utilities to help you do the basic functions that you do every day.
I hate the Uber customized computer. Like where you, or excuse me, not computer, a Mac. Because you can't, you go to use it and you're like, whoa, the guy who uses this knows a lot.
Sure.
And it almost becomes unusable to the point of somebody just trying to use it because every single thing, every single click does something that you're not expecting it to do.
Right. I think it's the first big choice point is are you using your machine? Are you the only user of your machine, and are you on that machine all the time and never having to switch to other workstations? You know, are right. are you in a lab environment? Are you in a corporate environment where there's a bunch of other stuff? Are you in some sort of shared environment where there's a pool of machines and you might be sitting down to something every day? I totally see the rationale behind customization. I do it myself on my primary machine, but it's always that push and pull between getting so customized. Like already, if I walk to a machine that does not have Quicksilver on it, I'm double tapping Command because that's my trigger key. And oh, damn, it's not here.
It should be the caps lock because double click the caps lock because no one uses the caps lock key.
That'd be a good one too. I think you could probably, you can set it to double anything. Right. I'm sure caps lock's one of them. But it's that not forgetting how to get around without all your helpers versus the time savings over time of having those customizations available.
Well, I think one thing that everyone forgets when we talk about customization is that there's a cost, not just a time cost, but a cost in making these things work. So, like, while Quicksilver is free, other utilities are not free. A good example, well, I'm not going to use a single example here, but
They're out there. Finder alternatives.
Replacements of things. And that's fine if you're one guy. It's $30. You don't care. That's insignificant. That's going to the movies for one night, for example, by yourself and paying for parking or getting free parking and getting donuts or whatever. but when you've got the small office, or when you've got even worse, the large office or even worse, the corp, those $30 add up, you know, times 100, times 1,000. And so it's prohibitive to say, oh, this is a solution that makes us go fast.
Right. You might let a core group that really would benefit from having a specific app or set of apps, you know, you buy it for them, but that's it. Yeah.
And or you may say, well, we'll do this on a case by case. But then that confuses it, because if somebody jumps from a different machine, they're not the same.
Right. Again, the assumption there is that people have their workstations, they're the primary, and they don't have to jump around.
The jump around. We have to pay for that now. jump around.
I'm paying for it right now.
Exactly. Well, the other thing is that it's a training issue, right?
Right.
So it's hard enough to get the kids to use the Mac anyway. And, you know, to be efficient at it, they learn to a point and then they stop. And this is in the workplace that I've seen this happen all the time. And it's a problem. And so if you add another freebie utility, then you add another layer of training. And so you may invest in this. You may spend, say, okay, you know, the $60,000 is worth it, or the $600 is worth it.
Right.
And then nobody uses that.
Sure.
So that's money wasted.
It seems like, as with anything, you want to do the cost benefit on, is there this nagging and persistent problem that many of my users have that needs to be solved?
Right.
And then you go looking for an app. I think a lot of times, because people love to tweak and they love to look for new stuff, they're in search of the next great utility that's going to save them
seconds
from themselves, or it's going to make their world that much more shiny.
Well, I think that, you know, one of my things about living with the Finder and not using a single tool outside of like a core, or, you know,
just
some,
making do with it
is
out
making
of the box.
Do with it out of the box, not changing it. And I will do some custom, I will change some things in the Finder as sure. it is to make it work better. But the users expect it to be a certain way. Mm-hmm. You know, the creative director wants to walk up to any Mac and know that it's going to work that one specific way. Mm-hmm. And to have it one user out of 50 have their Mac different,
yeah.
that's like, whoa, that wasn't expected.
Yeah. It seems like there's still this schism, I think, and the user interface. On the one hand, the default Finder does a good job of this sort of the visual orientation, whether you're in the icon mode or mm-hmm. your triple pane mode or whatever, that there are things, places, you know, and if your sense of computing is mapped very closely to something tactile, where it's where my stuff is on my, I was talking to a user the other day that was, he's somewhat, at the same time, he's embarrassed by his messy desktop on his computer, okay. but it actually maps to the way he thinks about files and folders.
Where
and
stuff
this
is right.
Yeah. And this is someone who's, you know, is, I guess, relatively newer. He's an older guy that's newer to the computing paradigm than, I didn't grow up with it, I guess. Is that there's sometimes a difference between the way people relate, whether that they grew up with these interfaces or not. Mm-hmm. But the point being that all the speed stuff that's out there, and a lot of these tools like a Quicksilver or whatever, they favor the word person. They favor the text thinker. So you're thinking, mm-hmm. what is that thing called, rather than where is it?
And right, the spatial versus the procedural.
Sure, sure.
To use specific words mm-hmm, for it. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the spatial. Mm-hmm. First thing I want to talk about is the dock. Mm. The dreaded, hated,
right.
scourged.
If you want it, you're wondering banished. Where it is. If you don't want it, you're wondering why you can't get rid of it.
Exactly. So the first thing I do with the dock is I get it off the bottom of the screen.
Now, why do you not like it at the bottom?
I have a MacBook Pro,
yeah.
and it's 900 pixels tall. My old Mac was 960 pixels tall.
Right. And you don't let it hide, and so I don't you want that.
And I don't want it to hide because, like, I think that's a waste of time.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want that space back.
Got
I
it.
Want that mm-hmm. 64 pixels back. Because what happens is the window draws, and when it draws, it goes, oh, there's the dock.
Yeah.
And if I hide the dock, then the window goes, oh, yeah, there's no dock. Then it draws down to the bottom, and when I go to move the window
yeah.
or resize the window,
right.
guess what happens? Hello, I'm the dock. I'm back.
Got it.
Like, yuck. So let's put the dock over on one of the sides,
mm-hmm.
either the left side or the right side.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter which way, but move it away from that and get that screen space back. The other thing that happens is that you get a new gesture. You get I'm going to use an app, and so I'm going to flip to the right or I'm going to flip to the left
mm-hmm.
to get that up.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seems to be – so a window will still drop, and the dock will be here. But guess what? You've got all this other real estate that's there.
Right.
And it's not getting in the way like it is down in the bottom.
Right. I imagine you're a small dock guy.
I make the dock pretty small. Mm-hmm. It's about – well, and the other thing that I do is I turn the grower on.
Uh-huh.
Right? So – you know, everybody looks at that and goes, oh, that is so, you know, animated, so waste of time. No, it's actually useful. So you make the dock pretty small,
right.
like, I want to say 32 by 32, the mm-hmm. icons, but I don't know what mm-hmm. they are. They're just small.
Yeah.
Wii icons. And then
too small if it wasn't growing. But
yeah, and then
is,
you do the grow, and it's like, and then, but the cool part about the grow is that you get the visual back. You get that quickie, there it is.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I do is I rearrange stuff in the dock based on tasks. So writer tools mm-hmm. are up at the top, mm-hmm. graphic tools are toward the middle, utility stuff is down on the bottom.
Right.
Right. And then that way it's an unthought of gesture of where I'm going to go.
This is something I've noticed. I finally found myself doing this, and I don't know why I didn't make the leap sooner, but I found that people, once they have a certain set of things on the dock, they treat it like this thing that can't be manipulated.
No, it's
much,
always,
you know what
moving.
I mean?
It's,
well, and that what's on it should be more transient based on what you've been doing recently. I find that people, every time they need something, they'll put it on the dock, and then you have this massive dock pretty soon.
No. Move stuff in and out of the dock,
yeah.
right? Like, a good example is, like, if I know that I'm going to go do a name search for a mm-hmm. new domain or mm-hmm. for a new company, then I'll put some specific tools that I'm going to use into the dock up on the top near the Apple menu,
right?
right? So there'll be the thesaurus, there'll be the Whois
mm-hmm.
Tool,
mm-hmm.
like the AKA command line, and some other, some specific links that you can drag there. So you can always drag a URL into the dock.
Right.
And then that way I have those four core things. And when I'm done with it, off they go.
I guess I should make a request now to the mm-hmm. computing universe. When I sit down at your machine, and I will someday sit down at your machine, make sure that the terminal's in the dock. That's just one that should be in everyone's.
It is. I have the terminal in the
dock.
I'm
not saying you. Oh, no. This capital Y, you. I'm talking to the computing universe. Just do us all a favor. And just put the terminal. Even if you don't use it yet, put it there for us.
There's some things that the terminal does really nice, like the RM command. Well, the rename command.
We can talk about that command later. Yeah, no, that's a different show.
Such a BOFH joke. Need more space on your hard drive? RM. Need to rename your files? RM. Right.
Instant shrinkage.
You need to fix that. You need to fix that pesky app that keeps crashing? RM it. folders in the dock.
Yeah.
Are a really good way.
You can put them there.
Of navigating. You can put a folder that has a whole bunch of stuff in the dock. Mm-hmm. And then when you click and hold, then it draws a menu that you can use. Now, the caveat of this is this. Don't put 100 things in that folder. Because that becomes a gesture, and right. It takes a long time for that thing to draw. So put 5 or 6 things that you're that you use sometimes and that you want to get to right away.
And I forget how it handles aliases in that little subdrawn menu, but that one way that you could use that is to just have a couple aliases to the things you're trying to get to most recently in there. That's in the dock, and sort of a mini quick launch on top of
quick launch on, right. So you don't have to pay for a launcher tool. You can make one pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. So that thing that I was doing with the word search, that could all be in a folder where I put those 5 items that I want in there, and then I can just drag them into the dock and get to them quickly. But that's neither here nor there about that. But this idea, and then hierarchical things, you could put a folder of folders in there. Mm-hmm. And each time you do that, you're going to wait for that thing to spring open. So, there's a law of diminishing returns. Not a law, but there's a diminishing returns that's happening.
Sure.
You want to be able to get to something quickly, but the more times you have to navigate through a hierarchy, it slows you down.
And the trade-off between being able to get to everything and having to wade through everything because now everything's accessible. So, like, reducing the complexity, but giving yourself just the really thinking about the key things you're going to need to get to at any point in time rather than, I always want to have even the far reaches of my machine accessible at a click.
Put the drag the app icon into the dock down by the trash, not into the trash, but by the trash, and then just click it and it'll open the applications. Mm-hmm. And then you can get to those from there if you want all access to your applications.
That's another one where again, it's the shortcut mentality, but the command, what is it? Command shift A to get you directly to your applications folder. That, depending on where you're at, can be almost as quick, especially if you use the typing to get to.
Well, then it becomes just this cord, like, command shift A, you just press it and then it goes. Mm-hmm. All right. So let's talk about the desktop because we were talking about spatiality.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Get off the desktop.
And what do you mean by that?
Well, what I mean is...
Don't work there. And why not?
Okay, you're going to pay for it now, or you're going to pay for it later, okay? So the idea is, at some point, there's going to be so many files that are on your desktop that you have to clean them up because they start stacking on top of each other, which is actually a really good feature. Now that means that, where did that file go? Oh, it's there. I mean, got to clean my desktop now. And don't do the command A and drop it all into a folder because that's just adding to the problem. So you've got to have somewhere on the desktop, you have to have at least, it can be on the desktop or it could be in your user folder called projects. And in that, put your projects. Now, a problem with this is that it's 2 steps to get to file something. You got to double click the projects folder and then you got to find the project. Better to drag the specific folders that you want to save stuff into onto the finder left side.
Yeah, what's that? Favorites.
The favorites area.
Yeah.
You put stuff in there, and now when you go to do an open or a save, there's your list, and you can just click them really quickly.
Right. There's another, turning into the hotkey program, but Command-T puts something into that favorite. So as you're navigating around, you start in work, you've got your projects folder, what am I working on today? These 3 things. Click Command-T.
And deleting them later doesn't delete the folders folders. It just deletes the instance of that on the...
Just removing it from your favorites.
Right. The other cool thing about putting stuff in the favorites is you can pull down the menu and select it from that menu that's there. Mm-hmm. And so you can get to stuff quickly. And I looked and looked and looked for this. And I looked for a utility that changed the command D from the desktop to command D, the default.
Oh, yeah. I'm not aware of that.
And I didn't find a utility. I must have spent a day and a half collectively.
If you know of this,
well, there's a folder. There's a program that does this, but I was looking for something that was free.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're talking about default folders?
Yeah, I'm talking about default folders. Yeah, right. Default folders are great, but there's too many features in it. Mm. I just want this one thing that does this one thing, and that would change the world a little bit, and maybe even do it by application.
That would be nice.
Or maybe roll through something. You know, so you could go command D, command D, command D. Oh, there's the folder. You know, something like that. And then that gesture becomes the same, and then I have the defaults that I'm going to go and save stuff to. But the other, so the idea of getting of not working on the desktop means that you have to be just a little bit conscious of where stuff's going to go.
Right. I think it's a symptom too of exactly what you're talking about. It's not easy enough to get down to where people are working or would work. And
right.
So it becomes the default just because these other tools, maybe they don't know about something like the favorites or whatever, but it's definitely a question of making it so that you don't feel like you need to work there. Or, I don't know, I'm sure there are some people out there that just want a pile of things, and that's how they deal with their physical reality as well as their computing reality.
So some mythology somebody was talking about on one of the forums that the desktop is actually a special folder and it's handled specially.
I never heard this.
Yeah, and that
how like it's got some
mystical magical properties. And the reality is that it's no different than any other path.
It is a special place.
It is
in my heart. So, but there's no processing difference as far as speed how it lists or catalogs files.
No, it doesn't slow it down or anything.
So even if this myth is false, that's still no excuse to work on the desktop.
It's still no excuse for working on the desktop.
Even if you're not, maybe we should perpetuate the myth so that people are scared of the.
No. It's not a speed issue. What we could do. And I haven't done this because I work a lot on the desktop, and I don't see the slowdown. Mm-hmm. What we could do is a benchmark. We could do a bake-off and see if in fact, the desktop is making your computer slower. And I don't think it is.
It'd be interesting to see.
We will see. We'll have that for a later day. All right. Make the icon smaller.
Make the pie higher.
Make the pie higher. Make the icon smaller. This is in reference to the Finder windows. Mm-hmm. So when you have a window and you're using that, the default size of those icons are pretty big.
Right.
And so I found that if I make them about 36x36.
And this is in the view options.
If I make them smaller, then I'm seeing more stuff on the screen at any given time. Mm-hmm. The icon is still recognizable, and it's quicker to go to jump between views.
I would add to that do the same thing with text size. Play around with the text size in the three-panel view because you're going to get more in your lists without having to scroll up. And
having more in the list means that you can just see more stuff. Mm-hmm. You don't have to scroll. You don't have to look. It's just there. Now there is an interesting thing. I did an experiment where I had something at 12 point, and then I changed to 10 point, and the size, the amount of stuff, didn't actually get more. Mm. It was the same amount, it's just the font was smaller.
No. Well, that's not as useful.
That's not useful. And the reason was because the icon only can get so small.
Oh, right.
Right?
So you bottomed out.
So you bottomed out. So yeah, I think, you know, 11 or 12 points really the smallest that you can get, unless you make the icons either go away or... get smaller.
Right. Or just you really love small text.
Well, there's the other thing is like on a huge monitor, small text doesn't really do you any good because then you're squinting to see what the what's there. So, you know, it's find that happy medium that's there. The way to get that is to go into Command J. So you're in a folder view, Command J gets you that.
Mm-hmm. It's also show view options under the little action menu, the little gear menu that's in your Finder there.
That's cool. 1, 2, 3 are the command keys to change between icon view, list view, and column view. Mm-hmm. Now, there was a debate on some podcast that these guys were saying, I don't use column view because I believe that it, and the other guys are,
I don't use icon view because I think it's old fashioned.
Mm-hmm. And the other guy was all about list view. And I'm like, I use all those views. Mm-hmm. Like, I switch between column view and icon view and list view all the time.
Regularly.
I mean, like, they're all useful. So list view is awesome for when you're trying to sort by date or sort by size or sort by alphabetical or reverse alphabetical by clicking on the top. Icon view is really cool when you have the preview icons, you know, where you have a folder of stuff and you can see, oh, there's the thing I'm looking for.
Right.
This is especially useful for Photoshop or for Illustrator stuff, where it bothers to actually put the view in there. And column view is great when you're trying to find something.
Yeah, when you're in drill down mode or you're just...
Where is this?
You want the breadcrumb of where have I been.
Yeah, where have I been. The other way is if I'm trying to move a whole bunch of files from one place to another, I'll use column view to go... I'm like, okay, I need to move it from here to here. If instead of having two windows open...
Right.
I use that and go, okay, there's all this stuff. Command A, drag, there it is. Mm-hmm. Notice that I'm this hybrid. Mm-hmm. I'm doing stuff on the keyboard and I'm doing stuff on the mouse. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are like, don't take your hand or don't use the mouse. You keep your hands on the keyboard. And other people are like,
It just depends on, I guess what comes more easily to you. If you're one of those folks who can keep many different sets of hotkeys in your head, or you think in terms of the letter representations
the
of things or the chords, then that's going to work.
Which is, that's fine. Some people like to work that way. I'm spatial and sequential all at the same time. I like to be able to have this go. I'm doing the mouse motion over here, and I like to be able to type stuff over here.
Right.
And it'll be the normal things like Command A, Command V, Command I, Command J, and that. And sometimes I'll even open a folder and then I'll press Z, and then it'll go down to the Z's, right? And then I'll tab through that to find the thing I'm looking for.
Right. I guess that's one other thing. We're talking about being in an environment where maybe you don't, where you're trying to minimize the clicks to get the stuff, which tends to be the theme, right? You're trying to reduce the number of either key commands or clicks to get to something. Thinking about how you organize your stuff and maybe not going so deep. A lot of people do their organization all with the taxonomy is all in the names of the folders, and so you end up with these really labyrinthine folder setups.
Right.
Yeah, and one way to bring everything closer to you from a clicks perspective is to just think more shallow. There are other things you can do, whether it be spotlight comments or file naming conventions or whatever. Think fewer folders and fewer levels there. Don't bury stuff so deeply.
And that, maybe that's the thing. Like when people say, oh, the Finder sucks. It's like, yeah, Finder sucks because
think about how you're using it.
Because you're not using it in a way that helps you.
Right.
A good example of this is one way to do it is if you have a web server and you've got a website, right? Well, there's this catch-all called images. Mm-hmm. And it's like every single bunch of images goes into this folder. Mm-hmm. And so logos there, all this. And so everything is bottom referencing back into images.
Sure.
And sometimes that doesn't help you.
Right. When you're looking for something and it's been referenced by some page and you would like to have it maybe a little more...
A little closer?
A little more.
And so the idea is that, move that page into a new folder and then have another images reference. Mm-hmm. Right. And then that way, if you have to move this whole thing, it just gets moved. Mm-hmm. And the whole entire thing can move with it.
Right.
And that's, like the catch-all folder that I have called projects, it stops working at some point. Mm-hmm. And what you really have to do is you really have to move that folder up one layer. Right. And then, someplace like, for example, the desktop, you move it up to the desktop and then you can, Command D, press B, and then
temporarily put it in your favorites.
Or temporarily put it in your favorites. Yeah. And then that way you remove that hierarchy.
I guess it goes back to something we were talking about earlier. It seems like making sure that you're reviewing the way that you've got things set up and making sure that the things that the context that made you set things up that way are still valid. I guess
exactly.
You know, revisiting that.
Yeah, revisiting that. It's like, oh, I'm doing, you know, it's like you find that you're doing the same thing over and over again. Like, well, don't do that anymore. Right? How can I eliminate
that? After Effects in 6 months, so why is it still in my dock?
Right.
And this project's been closed for however long, so should it go in the archives and get out of my face when my project's folder?
Right. You know, and maybe there should only, maybe you should have a rule, something inane like they can only have 5 projects in my projects folder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to make it easier that way.
An artificial constraint, but one that is reducing the complexity for you on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, or even changing your folder from projects to active, right? So move the whole folder from one place to another.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's in active, and then that means that it's at the top of the list every single time.
I like to bury it down in projects, current, active, like client, fun to work on. Those are all with underscores there.
As opposed to the other one, the unfun to work on has a couple of Z's in front of the name.
Yes, right. Z's.
Well, yeah, right. You can. That's a good example. Is you can put letters or symbols mm-hmm. in front of the name to push a folder up to the top.
Sure.
And you know, this is a thing we used to do all the time. In OS 9 and in earlier OSs, and I don't really see the practice happening as much in OS 10.
I think it's because the searching tools were not as good then, so you did have to rely more on you had your file folders and your naming structure there and.
Yeah, but Spotlight
browsing around. So yeah, search. I think the search modality is there more.
Feels slower sometimes to search than it does to just know where it is.
Oh yeah, it's always a trade off. The thing that always comes to mind to me when I'm thinking of search versus browse is I was walking through the one of the libraries on the University of Washington campus, and I was going through some random set of stacks, just as sort of a wandering thing, and I found some book that was the history of this church on Orkney. Is it Orkney Island, I want to say? There's some island off the north coast of Scotland. It's way up there. And there was this church that I had been to on some trip. And so I'm browsing through the stacks. I wasn't thinking, oh, I need to search for books about Orkney Island churches or whatever.
Who would?
And you ran, so you find things when you're browsing. Not that you want to, you know, play Discovery all the time in your workstation if you're trying to find a project file, but there's a time for seeing what's available, and that's when you're in the Finder or something like it, you're browsing around.
I found a file the other day. It was actually really cool. I'm going to have to post this somewhere. It was an article that I started to write called The Short Tale, and I worked on it.
Versus the long tail?
Yeah. Uh-huh. It was actually rebutting it. It's kind of cool. And so I found this, and then I stopped working on it, forgot about it. Mm-hmm. There it was. And fortunately, I named it something cool that would like, ooh, there's something that's interesting. What is that?
Right.
Oh, short tail. I'm like, oh, I remember this article.
Yeah, you can play you can play anthropologist in your own hard drive. And that's happened to me too, especially as you have your archive drive or one of these drives you're using mostly for storage of things that from days gone by.
Name stuff interesting instead of inanely.
Yeah.
Do you ever use the label color?
I do, but I only use them if I obey my rule of putting a README file in there saying what the colors mean. Because I have very few pet peeves, but one of them is to open up this folder that someone's been working on a project, and it's Skittles,
Taste the Rainbow,
but there's no code, so you have no idea what purple means. And I do use
it. It's set to mauve. What does that mean?
Right. Johnny always sets to mauve when he's angry.
Phaser's set to mauve.
So yeah, I like them. And I think especially when you're in the middle of a task, that's when I find them most useful. Like I'm doing something with a set of files and I'm going to temporarily, or as I do something with them, I'm going to be color coding them. But usually, unless I have a compelling reason to keep them there, I'm resetting the whole folder.
There you go.
Again.
I think I use colors once in a while, and it's usually only a color.
Mm.
You know, like I just want the contrast between stuff.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, okay, this is something that I don't need, so I'm not going to put a color on it.
Sure.
And this is something that I need to pay attention to, so it's going to get a color.
Yeah. It's great for quick sort of visual sorting like that, I think.
I don't think it's used enough, and I wish that I could change the icon to another icon.
Mm.
you know, so I could have another spatial reference.
While it's colored? Only while it's colored?
Only while it's colored. Hmm. You know, then I could have, you know, then I could have adding to Taste the Rainbow, the Lucky Charm. Hearts, rainbows, moons, unicorns, and bunny rabbits.
Purple horseshoes.
Purple horseshoes. Okay, double click the folder and look for the purple horseshoes.
Right. So what's it, you're going to have to school me here. Or a stationary pad?
Oh, stationary pads are cool.
Explain.
So the idea is that I often write and I need to make sure that the bottom has the disclaimer on the bottom.
This is stationary, like physical stationary.
And so the thing might have a header, a footer that says, you know, copyright John Foster, 1997, the address, whatever, you know, whatever it's the same. And I want to make sure that I don't have to keep doing that. And so, and this is especially cool when you're using an app like TextEdit or. Here's another good example. If you have a BB Edit, anything can be stationary. It doesn't matter.
Right.
And so what it does, if you click something to stationary, and the way that you get there is you do a Command I, the same place where the color thing got set.
Right.
And there's a button on there that says stationary. Now that doesn't mean that the file's never going to move again.
Mm-hmm.
It just means that it's going to automatically make a copy of it and then open that file.
Oh, got it. Okay, so it's a way of making templates or boilerplate stuff.
So in the case of BB Edit, if you have a web page that you always need, that you always are trying, you know, you want this certain setup, certain way, and you just double click it, and there you go, you get this new thing.
There it is.
Text Wrangler.
I've seen this checkbox before, and I never checked
it out. You've never checked it?
No, I've never.
It's been there for 7 years.
I've been afraid of stationary pad.
Well, that's what it does.
And now I know. That is handy.
It's totally handy. You know, there's like 100 uses for that, but you know, it's just one of those things that, like, once you know that, I can see that. And it's a subtle workflow change.
Mm-hmm. It seems, and again, it's favoring the, here's that thing that's the boilerplate for what I'm doing, as opposed to I'm going to remember my key command for that set of text in some sort of text expander or something like that.
Using some other tool that goes and, you know, types it for you, or you grab it out of a repository of things like the old text file of boilerplate.
Yeah.
Or you find the document that you want to edit, right? And you go, oh, I'm going to edit. I need a new one of these. And you just start. You forget to do the save as, then you wreck your template, right? This protects your template so that there's no way that you can screw it up.
Handy.
Let's see. I want to talk about Command Option I.
Mm-hmm.
So have you ever done this, Command Option I?
This is the bulk selected get info.
This is get info that keeps the window open, and whatever you click, it gives you it locks it in
this
place.
This is is there a different hotkey? There's the one that you've got multiple things selected. I and it pops up all of them.
Yeah.
And then there's the one that's the summary.
Yeah,
of
that's
everything
Command
that's
Option
selected.
I.
Okay, that's
right?
the one.
So Command I is the one that goes and you get windows everywhere.
Right.
The other one, Command Option I, then it gives you how big it is, all that. And then if you click on something else, that window changes. So you can go and you don't have to keep doing Command I on it. It's like a browser. And so other tools. The list is endless of alternate finder tools.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the stickies that they put somewhere in the window. So when you're clicking stuff, you're always getting info about this, right? Yeah. Handy to have, useful to know, but you know, you don't have to pay for that function. Right. You get that.
And you're not always in that mode either of wanting to see the detailed stats on everything.
Right. And it's really handy when you're trying to get rid of things or edit your disk or find revisions or I need to change a whole bunch of colors of stuff.
Right. Yeah. It's, I'm drawn to it, I think for the same reasons, like a moth to these things, but the dashboard widgets that show you every little nuance of how, the kernel's handling memory at this point in time. And I love those things from a just sort of window into the system standpoint, but most of the time I don't really care. You know, if there's an app that is not playing well, or I'm developing something, I really need to know that information. That's a very small slice of time that stuff's really interesting. So it's that argument for bring it up when you need it.
Right.
When you're doing something where that detailed information is fine, and then most of the time it's not a part of your interface.
I don't want it. I don't want it there. I want things to disappear. I want things to go. And that's, you know, that's the convenience of the desktop, right? Mm-hmm. And the desktop works to a point, and then it gets so cluttered that it's unusable. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's the forcing yourself to get in the habit of making a favorites, changing out favorites, replacing stuff in the dock,
right,
making things, you know, dealing with it.
Right.
And, you know, it's not about having an uncluttered desktop. That's not what this is. I'm never going to advocate that.
Mm.
Why?
To feel better about yourself.
So you can see the pretty picture.
You were always picked on as a child for your cluttered desktop. I don't know.
I don't know.
It does make sense if you're the sort of person that clutter causes stress. You know, the means of making things uncluttered can be something that allows you to focus.
Right. Well, here's a good example. Argument on twit.tv/forums today was about this guy saying how Inbox Zero was like the way to go.
This is
Merlin's thing, right? But there's an argument about this. And I'm like, you know, if it makes you feel good to have an inbox with having zero in it, that releases you, that somehow, you know, benefits you, that you can now think, oh, I've done that. I can go on with my day because I have nothing in my inbox.
Right.
Okay, that's cool. Uh-huh. But that's just one viewpoint, right?
I guess it's also, too, it's not dwelling on the, oh, this person told me that thing, and now I'll do that thing, and that's going to solve the problem. It's what is having a zero inbox afford you? Or, you know, what is having a clean desktop afford? Well, that's the question.
That's the question, right?
Whether or not you engage in something like that has everything to do with whether or not it's going to have a meaningful impact for you, not just because this guy is a productivity guru and said to do it, therefore I should do it.
Therefore, I should wear flip-flops on Friday. Or whatever. You know, just because the advocates say don't have a messy desktop because it makes it slow, it's hard to find stuff, it's a whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like there's a reason why that feature is there and why it works. When it breaks, that means that you have to do something about it. Same thing with my thing about the Inbox Zero is make a smart folder that just shows you the last 2 days of email.
Mm-hmm.
And then that way, instead of having 1,000 things in your inbox, you've got a visual version that has maybe 27 things. Half of it's going to be spam. Delete, 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 delete. Okay, now you got 10 things. Okay, that's from the list. That's from the list. That's from the announcement. Mm-hmm. That's from Amazon. That's from here. Now I have 3 things that I have to answer.
Hmm.
And you've broken it down way faster than this whole, you know, long.
I think that you should start a new series called Inbox Fake Zero that is all search folder based.
Inbox Fake Zero.
you should go head to head. You guys should that. You and Merlin should have a steel cage match. Inbox Zero versus Inbox Fake Zero.
I'm all about Fake Zero. So like it's like Fake Steve.
Right.
Rats. Makes me unhappy that there is no more Fake Steve. Not the same way. It was funnier when it was all when it could have been Steve for real writing that he was Fake Steve.
Yeah.
That. Now it's just some frigtard in a.
So do we have any other
we have one problem that we have to deal with.
Life rafts for those who are stuck with the default folder.
We have one problem that we have to deal with.
Embrace the default finder.
Batch renaming. This is where the finder breaks. This is the downfall.
Mm-hmm.
Like I have a list of 100 things and it could be pictures, it could be music, it could be folder names. You know, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's a file name. Now, the way that you normally rename files is you click it, press the return key, type a name, press the return key.
Uh-huh.
Or you move the mouse in a certain way, and then that reveals the edit box. But the fast way, click, return, name, click.
And one step up from that being Command A to select the name and paste it into the next one so that you've got
and then,
so you're
and
at
then,
least halfway
and
there,
then,
right?
And
you're
then,
just adding a number
and
or
then
whatever.
Right arrow, delete, delete, change the number.
Right.
So we all know, we all have done this where here's it. So I think up to about 10 names.
I was just going to say, if you have 10 or fewer things, go ahead and
just
do
it. I'll do the Command A, Command C, you know, next, you know, I'll do that because I'm really quick at that and that's fine. And I'm not opposed to doing that. And I would be remiss in saying, yeah, you should use a go out and find a batch renamer, mm-hmm. download it, learn to use it, then rename your 10 files. That will take you way longer mm-hmm. than it will be just to rename the files. But if you have to rename files all the time, batch renamer is the way to go. Mm-hmm. So there's a whole bunch of them. There is a thing called Renamer for Mac, which Ben is a fan of.
And I say it's my favorite because it's free, and it's the one I downloaded first, and it does what I needed it to. I can't say that I've done an exhaustive evaluation of all of the ones that are out there, but it works great.
There's one called File List. There's another one called, I printed that twice. And there's another one called A Better Finder Rename. Mm-hmm. So all of them work equally well. They all rename files.
You've used some of the other ones as well?
I've used them all.
Okay.
Free is good. Mm-hmm. A Better Finder Rename, gosh, that goes all the way back to OS 7 or 8. I mean, I've used it I think I've used this thing for like 9 years.
Isn't there a Finder replacement called the Better Finder as
a
well?
Better
is it the same
Yeah,
folks?
There's a Better Finder Select and there's a Better Finder Rename, okay? So a Better Finder Select is the idea is like, I want every file that starts with A and ends with Z, but none of the other ones. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. And it'll select just those.
And I think Renamer for Mac, I forget, I haven't used this feature of it in a while, but I think it'll even let you do John's favorite, regular expression-based selection and replace as well.
I know how do you make that work? Gosh. I would rather write 18 lines of Python.
than do a regular expression. I would rather write 3 lines of Python than include a regular expression search. I can't say that I lean heavily on a cheat sheet whenever I do regular expression
stuff.
It
might as well be that one language that I cannot say on the air.
It's what? Perl?
Brain f***.
Brain. Yeah. That's what you encounter when you go to use
brain regular expressions? Brain f*** might as well be regular expressions. I mean, regular expressions might as well be brain f***.
I'm not familiar. Are you talking about there's an actual language called brain f***?
Yeah, there's a language called brain f***.
I haven't heard of it. Oh, man. Okay, I'm dedicated to have written Hello World and brain f- by the time we do our next show.
No, go and look this thing up. It is the most inane language.
Is it one of those joke languages?
It's a real language. Oh, there's really? A compiler for it and everything. Wow. Yeah, there's a GCC compiler for brain f-
I can't wait.
And it makes real code, and I don't know how to get my head around it. I'm never going to. Mm. All right, so... these tools all work really well.
Yeah.
It's
one of the things you don't think you need until you run into one of those situations where someone's giving you that big set of something and all of a sudden you need to rename it.
Now, if you don't want to use that, if you are in an environment where you don't have access to be able to
technology
or the interweb, you don't have access to the intercom. Okay. Mm-hmm. You're not allowed to install something on your Mac. Have no fear. Automator's here. Mm-hmm. Automator inside. It's okay. If you're going to use Automator, be prepared to spend a little bit of time learning this thing. Mm-hmm. It does a ton of stuff. We're going to have a show on Automator.
Fantastic.
To get your head around Automator. But there's a thing, the two things about Automator. One is that you can search for functions. Mm-hmm. So go into Automator, go in the little spotlight tool and type rename, and up will pop rename finder items.
Mm-hmm. And what are the actions? That's what they're called, right?
They're actions.
The components you put into a workflow are actions, right?
So you can make and then drag this action over to the right side of the window. Mm-hmm. And from here, you can rename files based on add date or time. Mm-hmm. Add text, change case, mm-hmm. make sequential, and replace text.
Nice. And the inputs can be what's selected in the finder, those sorts of things?
Yeah. Well, there's two ways that this works. One is that you can make an action that when you double-click it, it'll always rename just those specific files mm-hmm. every single time. Mm-hmm. Or you can add this as a finder action mm-hmm. that when you control-click when you right-click,
it's in the context menu
it's in the context menu, and then... it'll work. So uh-huh. the thing you can do is you can select all your files, Command A, or click or whatever,
and run it,
and then run that thing.
So and this is a built-in action.
Even have to really learn anything about this. And so if you do make sequential, it'll add a number to the existing file name, or you can rename the name, mm-hmm. right? So you can have the name be, you know, Boangus mm-hmm. underscore, mm-hmm. and then after that, it'll add 1, 2, 3, 4.
I feel a challenge coming on. We should have a contest for the most poetic batch renaming out there. You can use whatever renamer tool you want to use, and it has to be a very aesthetically pleasing use of the batch renaming function.
Like you're making it like it's poetry?
Yeah, what comes out should inspire us.
That's
what comes in can be anything, a batch of photos or whatever, but it doesn't need to be useful necessarily. It just needs to
use
be pretty.
A batch renamer and a bunch of steps to do things to random files.
Yeah, or not even random files necessarily. It could be just a batch, but what needs to come out the other end is something pretty.
That's weird.
Can I give you our first challenge? Our first MacBreak Tech challenge?
MacBreak Tech challenge. I'm baffled a little bit by the idea of it, but okay.
I'm not sure if the idea. I'm more enamored of maybe with the idea than what the outcome is.
What the outcome is. You don't really care what the outcome is?
Mm-mm.
You know, it's the Sesame Street part of the show where the batch renaming is brought to you by the number right. A and the letter Z. Did I say the number Z? Yeah, I did mean that. Yeah. All right. Do we need an FTP program on our computer?
Not if we have the Finder.
No, the Finder's awesome that way. You know, we spend a lot of time looking at everybody go, wow, I have the newest, greatest FTP program.
Mm.
Okay, that's nice. Don't need it. It's built in. Where's that menu?
It's go to server.
Go to server, right. And then you can type in the IP address or the URL.
Mm-hmm. And that works for, you know, shares and all that stuff. If you've got a local, the syntax can be a little funky remembering what the protocol should be up ahead.
AFP colon slash whatever the name
connect
is.
Connect to server. Connect it's a command server. K.
Command K. Right, command K.
One of that we should mention. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No.
While we're talking about FTP.
Well, the FTP, there's some stuff with this, is that if your FTP has web dev enabled,
mm-hmm.
then it's two ways.
Mm-hmm. Or your web server, right?
Or
it doesn't
your
need
web
to be
server.
An FTP server with web dev.
Yeah, well, just...
Does the FTP service have a built-in module for web dev-based access? Or are you just talking about web dev on an HTTP server?
Right. If web dev is turned on,
right.
then this is a two-way street.
Right.
If it's not, if it's just FTP, mm-hmm. then it's read-only.
Right.
Meaning that you can double-click a file and your editor will open it.
Right.
But...
some local temp copy or something.
It's open it, and if you do a save, it's going to save it local.
Yeah.
So not so cool, but you can drag stuff off and mm-hmm. you can do that. But if web dev's enabled, it's two ways. That means you can double click, edit your file there, save it, mm-hmm. and it's been saved. And so then your web server or your HT access file
mm-hmm.
or whatever you're editing on your server is going to automatically update just with the command S. And editing on the server is a really cool way to go.
Mm-hmm.
It means that...
It saves you that sync trip.
Saves you the sync trip, and it also saves you a... you don't have files in two places. You have mm-hmm. files in one place. Mm-hmm. You go, did I copy that to the web server?
Right.
I don't remember. All right, well, I like the Finder.
I find living with the Finder not so bad. I have to admit, I've become enamored with Quicksilver more recently, but I don't find myself banging my head against things when I have to use the Finder. And I think that's just like the stuff that we've covered. Keep using the shortcuts that are available to you, or the ones that you can remember, and using the sort of those transient focus areas that are available to you, whether mm-hmm. it be dragging stuff onto the dock or dragging stuff into the favorites, and keeping things shallow if you're working in that sort of environment.
You know, a folder that's named the correct thing
mm-hmm.
goes a long way toward organization.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, just you don't have to do radical names. Just make meaningful names.
Mm-hmm. And consistent, too.
And consistent.
Because I'm actually glad we talked about batch renamers. That's one of those sort of principles of file naming, is that I always insist that a lot of people punt file naming until they've got a really good, I don't have a scheme for it yet. And until I come up with a scheme, I don't
right.
If you name stuff consistently, even if your names are completely arbitrary, you know, everything is monkey 1 through 12, your batch renamer allows you to easily, regular about it allows you to go back later and either with a script or with a batch renamer or whatever, you're able to get to that new naming and you can switch naming schemes very easily. Right. But if you're naming it all over the map, that's a lot harder, unless you want to use John's favorite regular expressions to rename.
I hate them. Somebody's going to send me the most awesome, speaking of writing assignments, somebody's going to send me the most awesome instructions ever about getting your head around regular expressions.
There you go, yeah.
Or they're going to troll through the MIT classes, mm-hmm. and they're going to find that guy who, like, is the god of regular expressions, and I'm going to get that course, and I'm going to go, that's easy. What was I getting?
I'm already designing in my head what a regular expressions trophy might look like to give you when you finally unlock
it. It's going
to
be /N.
Nice.
What else do we need to talk about? Anything?
I think we covered it.
All right. Well, all this stuff is found easily in the help section of your local finder. There's mm-hmm. lots to learn from that. Don't be afraid of looking in there. I mean, yeah, it's help. Mm-hmm. That's what it's for. It's documentation. Read about that. The other one, I want to add this. Mm-hmm. If you're afraid of mucking your environment, like your production environment, mm-hmm. like you're trying something out, and,
sure.
and you want to make sure that it's staying the same, go into the system preferences, make a new user, mm-hmm. right? Call it playground.
Sandbox, yeah.
Yeah, or yeah. sandbox. Yeah. Or amusement park, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you have this new environment that you can change at will.
Right.
You can go and try new stuff out. You can go and see if it's going to work. You can go and, you know, turn on show folder size for every single folder and watch your machine crawl.
Right.
You can, there's lots of things, you know, to go and try. And you're not going to break anything.
Right,
and
just delete the user when you're done if you don't care about it.
And then you can start to apply some of those things to your day-to-day. The other thing this is like, so from a knob point of view. Mm-hmm. No, there's noobs and there's knobs, right. Okay? So from a knob point of view, a lot of knobs try to learn all this stuff at the exact same, learn all this stuff and implement it all at the exact same time. Mm. That's not going to work, right? Do one thing, then add another thing,
right.
Then add another thing, right? If you, at least this is the way I work on stuff.
Let me do. I'm adding a shortcut when I think for the 15th time I've done this thing that I would finally like to learn the shortcut for that. Then I add it.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, Or another good example is like I'm trying to save stuff, and the reason why I'm saving on the desktop, it's fast. Then I'm like, well, how do I? Oh, that's too many double clicks, mm-hmm. right? And I found the other day that I was. Gosh, what was I doing? I was adding icons to a podcast, mm-hmm. and I kept having to go to the backup server, click on the projects folder, click on the thing, go to the icons, click. It was mm-hmm. like 7, and then I had to wait for the server to show up. It was horrible. Mm-hmm. So what did I do? Moved the icon to the images folder.
There's that.
A perfect place for it.
Sure.
And then it was like, the images folder or pictures folder. There it was, and like, right, I need that click, mm-hmm. click, and I was down to 2 clicks. It was pretty cool.
That's a good example of making your environment fit the current task as opposed to,
I found out that I did that task, like, a lot in a week, and I might do it, like, 10 times, right. But, you know, that's...
And that need may fade for you if you have a dearth of need for podcast icons for on, it goes away.
Yeah, like the short tail project, that went away. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to revisit that.
Should we mention that we can be found? I don't know if we ever mentioned on one of the previous shows about being able to comment on PixelCore TV.
Yeah, but that's broken, isn't it?
No.
I thought you had to log in.
You don't have to log in.
Cool. They fixed it.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, you fixed it.
They fixed it. It is a they that sometimes goes by me.
They fixed it.
Yeah,
they
didn't know it was set that way, and then they fixed it. So, yeah. Yes, you can comment without logging in on PixelCore TV.
Neato. And then, you know, there's another place you can comment.
MacBreakTech.com. Oh, nice. I forgot that.
We have our own domain there for this because a couple of things. One was it made a lot of sense from a search engine point of view to stick that there.
Yeah.
And, it's just another view. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not that we're competing. It's not that we're taking anything away. It's just one more place to see stuff. And, there's a pretty cool WordPress template that looks like a Mac.
Mm-hmm. I think usually it's got draggy droppy on it too.
Yeah, you can drag the order of that stuff around and the cookie remembers it.
Eye candy.
That's one good thing for cookies. All right. Well, I don't have anything else to talk about. Are we out? I'm John Foster.
I'm Ben Durbin.
See you on the other side.